Welcome back to the Illinois Agronomy Roundup. I'm your host, Troy Kazire. We're here at the Bear Crop Science Learning Center in Monmouth, Illinois, and today we've got Lance Tarchione back with us. Lance is a technical agronomist for DeKalb Asgro here in, Central Illinois-ish?
West Central, generally
West,
is what
West
I call
Central
it.
Illinois.
You can define Central Illinois lots of different ways, but yeah. West Central is what I call it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming back, Lance, and spending some time with us. I guess why don't we remind everybody what your tell us a little bit about the technical agronomist role and kind of what that is and kind of your day-to-day responsibilities.
Sure. So as a technical agronomist for DeKalb and Asgro, my role is to provide training to our sales force, provide training to our dealers, provide technical support for our corn and soybean products, traits, give agronomic advice to customers. So basically, if it's anything of a technical nature related to the DeKalb Asgro seed or management of corn or soybeans, those are things that I would work with. Cover roughly 8 counties and work with 4 sales districts.
Okay, excellent. Well, again, appreciate you coming in, and I know you and I have a lot of conversations this time of year about planting season and the way things are shaping up, and I know you had some things in your mind, and we visited for a little bit here on some key topics that I think are going to be pretty important for farmers to keep in mind over the next month or so. One of those things is residue management, right? We had a lot of fields that got harvested really late. A lot of residue that didn't get broken down, decomposed over the winter time, and in particular those fields that were corn going back into corn probably have some residue issues. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think we can look back at some of the learnings from 2009, 2010, kind of give us a glimpse into what we might have coming to deal with this spring. If you harvested corn fields in late November, December, even into January last fall, winter. Really minimal opportunity for residue decomposition to get started in the fall in those fields. A lot of those fields, there was really no opportunity to do any fall tillage. So we've got some what I would call very fresh corn residue there. And when that residue starts to break down, when soils warm up and the microbes in the soil get active here late spring, early summer, we're going to have a lot of nitrogen tie up when that process occurs. So if you do plan to go to corn, back to corn, in a field of corn on corn that you have some corn stalks, late harvest, didn't get fall tillage done, expect there's going to be a lot of nitrogen tie up in that field. There's probably some things we need to think about as far as how do we manage that residue in the spring. Do we do deep primary tillage? Do we do vertical tillage? Do we do no tillage? How do we handle that residue? And then what are the implications on our nitrogen program based on how we choose to handle the residue from a tillage standpoint?
Sure. So you got that guy that's asking, okay, what do I, I didn't get any tillage done last spring. Maybe I've got some ruts out there or whatever. Do I chisel plow this now in the spring, or do I just try to level those ruts off? Or, how much do I need to think about mixing that residue in? What are you telling guys?
Yeah, I was doing some late last fall, early in the winter, doing some leveling on some fields of my own, and it was you just think about we made tracks in the wet harvest of 18, we made tracks in the spring of 19, we made tracks in the summer of 19, and in a few cases we made another set of tracks in the fall of 19. So if you're a devout no-tiller, as I am, between planters, sprayers, fertilizer spreaders, combines, there's a lot of tracks out there. So, we need to get those fields, leveled up enough that we can stay in the operator seat when we're traveling across them and have a reasonably good seed bed. I'm not a big fan of deep primary tillage in the spring. I think if you know you've got deep compaction to deal with, and you need to do some aggressive tillage, I don't think spring's probably the best time to do that. I'd say do as little as you think you can get by with in the spring. Let's get this 2020 crop planted, get it harvested, and then let's try to address those deeper compaction issues with some deeper primary tillage, hopefully in some good soil conditions in the fall of 2020.
Sure. So then, as we think about, we've had 2 years in a row with kind of prolonged wet and cool conditions, delayed our planting, really delayed it last year. I think the temptation is probably going to be pretty intense for, you know, soon as it looks remotely fit.
Don't stand in front of a planter this spring when it's marginal conditions.
So what, you know, when we think about what, one of the things that we saw around here quite a bit last year was, you know, when guys did roll, sometimes it was a little bit too wet. You know, we did see some sidewall compaction and sort of those tomahawk style roots or mohawk roots. You know, you kind of counseling guys to, you know, I know it's been a tough couple of years, but we still need to be patient.
Well, last year was, you know, it seemed like no matter what you did wrong last year, it ended up being better than you would have expected it to be. I don't think that's necessarily a lesson we want to take away.
Yeah.
I'm a little fearful that maybe some people will think, well, you know, it was okay last year, so it's okay. You know, we were missing one June rain away from probably the worst rootless corn we've ever seen, so we dodged a bullet there. We certainly dodged a bullet with the relatively cool, relatively moist summer in most areas. So the fact that you can, you know, mud corn in June and still raise 200 plus bushel corn in a lot of cases is you know, maybe a little bit testament to modern genetics, but it's probably a lot of luck with some favorable weather conditions. So I do think that last year, yes, looking back on last year, we probably should have mudded more corn in April, because most guys ended up settling for poorer planting conditions in June than they passed up in April. Yeah. But that's hindsight.
Exactly.
Being 2020, and you know, 9.7 times out of 10, mudding something in April is not a good idea.
That's right.
So I'm going to be encouraging patience, as crazy as that may sound to some people. And I may be just talking to myself or talking to this wall here in some cases when I'm urging people to be patient. But I do think that, you know, generally speaking, we want to try to do things when it's fit. And last year was maybe the exception to that rule. When, you know, if it's never going to be fit, I guess you can do what you want. But, you know, I'm going to assume at some point in time we're going to get some good conditions. So I'm not planning on mudding stuff in the first marginal window that I get in April.
No, good advice. And again, it's going to be, temptation's going to be there. It's going to be pretty tough to pretty tough to wait. But I think it's, you're right, it's pretty important. We want them to have those soil conditions. Better to have them fit than putting things in a little bit too wet.
You know, and if you just cannot resist getting out there when it's a little bit marginal in April, you know, I would maybe encourage you to consider doing that to your beans rather than to your corn.
Yeah.
So, you know, I am a big fan of early planted beans. We didn't necessarily always see the benefit to early planted soybeans in 19 that we have come to expect. But the data set's pretty clear on that there is a yield advantage for planting soybeans early, and soybeans generally still respond positively to early planting, even if those early conditions are pretty tough. Corn, not necessarily the case, and although I'm not subscribing to the theory that corn planting data is irrelevant, you know, there are people that kind of looking like, well, gosh, we planted corn in April, and we planted corn in May, and we planted corn in June, and it all yielded about the same, so maybe corn planting date doesn't matter. I'm not going to take it quite that far.
No.
But there's nothing wrong with planting corn in the middle of May. We don't have to have all of our corn in the first half of April. And you know, if you want to take advantage of an early window that you think is a little on the marginal side, and if that thought's in the back of your head that maybe I shouldn't be doing this, you know, I would encourage you to either not do it or maybe do it to your beans rather than doing it to your corn.
Beans can handle that tougher ground a little bit better than corn can. So let's talk a little bit more. You know, we brought up nitrogen earlier, and that concern about nitrogen maybe being tied up as that residue decomposes later than normal. So what are you recommending to guys as far as their nitrogen management regime for this season?
Right. So that's a good question, and I think it's going to vary a little bit based on how you manage your nitrogen in your whole program. So if you're a you know, probably the worst case scenario would, if you're a spring anhydrous guy, if you're going to put on spring anhydrous and that's it, on a corn-on-corn situation, that's kind of a worst case scenario for me, because essentially you're planting that corn crop and it's going to think no nitrogen has been applied yet.
No.
Because that spring anhydrous that you applied is not available to that crop till it's, you know, several weeks old. And in that interim period, it's going to be living off of what it can find from the soil. And the only thing it's going to have access to is what the microbes don't use, right. And that's going to be next to nothing. So, you know, in any corn-on-corn situation, especially if it was a spring anhydrous corn-on-corn situation, you know, I want to see a minimum of 60 units of readily available nitrogen, some sort of UAN solution, or, you know, that's probably my favorite, 60 units worth of nitrogen at a minimum, to, you know, basically the only thing you can do is feed that microbial biomass and put enough out there that when they get what they want, there's still something left over for the corn crop. If there's a tug of war going on between a microbe and a corn root, the microbe's going to win.
Yeah.
And so we have to feed that microbial biomass to make sure that there's something left over for the corn crop. And it's going to take, I would say, at a minimum, you know, and it may take more than that if we have a, you know, cool spring conditions, dry spring conditions, if we have some challenging spring conditions, and you've got some really heavy fresh residue. Worst case scenario would be you go out there and hit it with some sort of vertical tillage tool, you chop it up into small pieces, you incorporate it into the top 2 inches of soil. That's really going to kick off that degradation of that residue, which is great, but it's also going to suck every available drop of, you know, nitrogen out of your soil. And you're also going to be planting that seed into a mixture of residue and soil, which makes seed to soil contact difficult. So the residue management piece is challenging, because I mentioned earlier I'm not a big fan of deep primary tillage in the spring. You know, a lot of guys aren't really comfortable or aren't set up to no-till corn on corn, and there's challenges with that as well. And so most people compromise and they do a little bit of tillage, which, you know, is kind of a not a good scenario for seed to soil contact or for nitrogen immobilization. So it's a challenge to manage that. You know, that's why I'm frankly not a big fan of doing corn on corn into untouched corn stalks, unless you're a no-tiller. If you're a no-tiller and that's your system, there's actually less residue tie-up or nitrogen tie-up with the residue if you leave it all on the surface.
Right.
It's when the residue gets incorporated into the soil that the tie-up gets bad. So if you can manage the residue on the surface and you can manage the disease risk that goes with that, and you've got a planter that's set up to handle those conditions, that's probably the best way to manage the residue from a nitrogen tie-up standpoint.
Sure.
Now there's other challenges with that. But and I'd also remind producers that you don't have to necessarily use 60 pounds extra nitrogen. You
sure.
just need to make sure that you allow some space in your nitrogen budget to have that 60 units of UAN up front. So if you're going to put on spring anhydrous, just back the rate down 60 units.
Yep.
And put 60 units on a spring. Now if you've got fall anhydrous on and you put on a full rate, you know, I am going to recommend you use some more, because you need some UAN out there as well. It's maybe not quite as critical, because that fall anhydrous will be available to the plant a little quicker than the spring anhydrous will, but that corn crop's going to go through a stressful, you know, nitrogen limiting period as well. So really the only scenario where I wouldn't recommend some supplemental spring nitrogen is if you're in a UAN based program where you're putting 100% of your nitrogen out there in the spring, and in that scenario you're already covering that base.
Yeah, exactly. And we've got data last couple of years in particular here at the Learning Center, where we've seen front loading your whatever nitrogen you're putting on with something available up front has really made a difference. We've had these prolonged cool wet springs, and, you know, this year not so much cool, but we still haven't got those temperatures yet to really break down that residue. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. all that residue from those late harvests, yeah, definitely we want to see something available right. up front. Right. I think that's going to pay off.
We've learned, you know, through some of the work that some of the high yield corn gurus have done, that it's pretty important for that plant to never sense it's in a nitrogen deficient environment early on. If it does, it gets too conservative, and if you let that plant get conservative at an early age, you can't bring it back at that point once it's already limited its yield potential based on its assessment that, you know, sure. it's going to be a nitrogen limiting environment. So it's I think putting nitrogen on through the season, there are scenarios where that's good. It's good to have that option, but you got to make sure you got enough on up front that we're priming that pump and getting that crop off to a good start.
Absolutely. Great information, Lance. Anything else on your mind?
No, just everybody be safe. And I guess it is a good reminder. We had that stretch of weather there a couple weeks ago where it got really fit. We were joking earlier. That was probably the most fit it's been in about 2 years. I'd have to think sometime in 2018 was the last time soil conditions were that good. Yeah. And we did have a good opportunity to get some spring anhydrous on. It was going on great. I saw some guys, putting spring anhydrous on some corn stalk fields, which is what made me think of the conversation we had here. So, even though it feels wet and it's cool, and that week was a good reminder that things can change quickly. Yeah. So I am, optimistic. You can find forecasters that are predicting a repeat of the 2019 spring. I don't know why anybody would want to think about that. Who knows what this spring will bring, but I'm optimistic that we'll have a closer to normal spring and have some good planting window and get things off to a better start than we did in 2019.
Definitely feels like a better place than we have been for quite a while. So, Lance, thank you. Appreciate you coming in.
You bet.
And thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time on the next episode of the Illinois Agronomy Roundup. Thank you.